As Vimes was ushered out, he saw another party of dwarfs assembled in the anteroom. One or two of them nodded at him as they were herded in. Dee turned back to Vimes.
"I hope you didn't tire His Majesty."
"Someone else has already been doing that, by the look of it."
"These are sleepless times," said the idea's taster.
"Scone turned up yet?" said Vimes innocently.
"Your Excellency, if you persist in this attitude, a complaint will go to your Lord Veterinary."
"He does so look forward to them.
Was it this way out?"
It was the last word said until Vimes and his guards were back in the coach and the doors to daylight were opening ahead of them. Out of the corner of his eye, Vimes saw that Chiri was shaking.
"Certainly it's you done it, the cold air after the warmth underground," he ventured.
Chiri grinned in relief.
"Yes, it does," she said.
"Seem quite a decent sort," said Vimes.
"What was that he muttered when I said I hadn't been trained?"
"He said, 'Who has, sir?'"
"Sounded like it. All that arguing. It's not a case of sitting on the throne and saying, 'Do this, do that, then.'"
"Dwarfs are very argumentative, sir. Of course, many wouldn't agree. But none of the big dwarf clans are happy about this. You know how it is. The Coppereds didn't want Albrecht, and the Schmalzbergers wouldn't support anyone called Glodson. The Ankh-Morpork dwarfs were split both ways. And Rhys comes from a little coal-mining clan near Chlamedos that isn't important enough to be on anyone's side."
"You mean, he didn't get to be king because everyone liked him, but because no one disliked him enough?"
"That's right, sir."
Vimes glanced at the crumpled letters that the king had thrust into his hand. By daylight he could see the faint scribble on one corner. There were just two words. "Midnight, see?" Humming to himself, he tore the piece of paper off and rolled it into a ball.
"And now for the damn vampire," he said.
"Don't worry, sir," said Chiri. "What's the worst she can do? Bite your head off?"
"Thank you for that, Corporal. Tell me, those robes some of the dwarfs were wearing, I know they wear them on the surface so they're not polluted by the nasty sunlight, but why wear them down here?"
"It's traditional, sir. They were worn by the, well, it's what you'd call the knocker men, sir."
"What did they do?"
"Well, you know about fire damp, it's a gas you get in mines sometimes, it explodes."
Vimes saw the images in his mind as Chiri explained. The miners would clear the area if they were lucky, and the knocker man would go in wearing layer after layer of chainmail and leather, carrying his sack of wicker globes stuffed with rags and oil, and his long pole, and his slingshot. Down in the mines, all alone, he'd hear the knockers, Aggie Hammer Thief, and all the other things that made noises deep under the earth. There could be no light, because light would mean sudden roaring death. The knocker man would feel his way through the utter dark far below the surface. There was a type of cricket that lived in the mines. It chirruped loudly in the presence of fire damp. The knocker man would have one in a box, tied to his hat. When it sang, a knocker man who was either very confident or extremely suicidal would step back, light the torch on the end of his pole and thrust it ahead of him. The more careful knocker man would step back rather more and slingshot a ball of burning rags into the unseen death. Either way, he'd trust in his thick leather clothes to protect him from the worst of the blast. Initially, the dangerous trade did not run in families because who'd marry a knocker man? They were dead dwarfs walking. But sometimes a young dwarf would ask to become one. His family would be proud, wave him goodbye, and then speak of him as if he was dead, because that made it easier. Sometimes, though, knocker men came back, and the ones that survived went on to survive again, because surviving is a matter of practice. And sometimes they would talk a little of what they heard, all alone in the deep mines, the tap-tapping of dead dwarfs trying to get back into the world, the distant laughter of Aggie Hammer Thief, the heartbeat of the turtle that carried the world. Knockermen became kings. Vimes, listening with his mouth open, wondered why the hell it was that dwarfs believed that they had no religion and no priests. Being a dwarf was a religion. People went into the dark for the good of the clan and heard things and were changed and came back to tell. And then, 50 years ago, a dwarf tinkering in Ankh-Morpork had found that if you put a simple fine mesh over your lantern flame, it had burned blue in the presence of the gas but wouldn't explode. It was a discovery of immense value to the good of dwarfdom. And, as so often happens with such discoveries, almost immediately led to a war.
"And afterwards there were two kinds of dwarf," said Cheery sadly. "There's the copperheads, who all use the lamp and the patent gas exploder, and the schmaltzbergers, who stick to the old ways. Of course, we're all dwarfs," she said, "but relations are rather strained."
"I bet they are."
"Oh, no. Old dwarfs recognise the need for the low king. It's just that
they don't quite see why knockermen are still so powerful."
"It's all very sad," said Cheery. "Did I tell you my brother Snorri went off to be a knockerman?"
"I don't think so."
"He died in an explosion somewhere under Borogravia. But he was doing what he wanted to do."
After a moment, she added conscientiously,
"Well, up to the moment when the blast hit him. After that, I don't think so."
Now the coach was rumbling up the mountain on one side of the town. Vimes looked down at the little round helmet beside him. "Funny how you think you know about people," he thought. The wheels clattered over the wood of a drawbridge. As castles went, this one looked as though it could be taken by a small squad of not very efficient soldiers. Its builder had not been thinking about fortifications. He'd been influenced by fairy tales and possibly by some of the more ornamental sorts of cake. It was a castle for looking at. For defence, putting a blanket over your head might be marginally safer. The coach stopped in the courtyard. To Vimes's amazement, a familiar figure in a shabby black coat came shuffling up to open the door.
"Igor?"
"Yes, master?"
"What the hell are you doing here?"
I'm opening this here door, master," said Igor.
"But why aren't you—"
Then it stole over Vimes that Igor was different. This Igor had both eyes the same colour, and some of his scars were in different places.
"Sorry," he mumbled, "I thought you were Igor."
"Oh, you mean my cousin Igor," said Igor. "He works down at the embassy. How's he getting on?"
He's looking well," said Vimes. "Pretty well, yes."
"Did he mention how Igor's getting on, sir?"
said Igor, shambling away so fast that Vimes had to run to keep up.
"Only none of us have heard from him, not even Igor, who's always been very close."
"I'm sorry, is your whole family called Igor?"
"Oh, yes, sir. It avoids confusion."
"It does?"
"Yes, sir. Anyone who is anyone in Oberwald wouldn't dream of employing any other servant but an Igor. Ah, here we are, sir. The mistress is expecting you."
They'd walked under an arch, and Igor was opening a door with far more studs in it than was respectable. This led to a hallway.
"Are you sure you want to come?" said Vimes to Cheery. "She is a vampire."
"Vampires don't worry me, sir."
"Lucky for you," said Vimes.
He glanced at the silent Tantony. The man was looking strained.
"Tell our friend here he won't be needed, and he's to wait for us in the coach, the lucky devil," he said. "But don't translate that last bit."
Igor opened an inner door as Tantony almost ran out of the hall.
"His Grace, His Excellency, our Sir Samuel," said Lady Margalotta. "Do come in. I know you don't like being called Your Grace. Isn't this tiresome? But it has to be done, doesn't it?"
It wasn't what he'd expected. Vampires weren't supposed to wear pearls, or jumpers in pink. In Vimes's world, they didn't wear sensible flat shoes either, or have a sitting room in which every conceivable piece of furniture was upholstered in chintz. Lady Margalotta looked like someone's mother, although possibly someone who'd had an expensive education and a pony called Fidget. She moved like someone who had grown used to her body, and in general looked like what Vimes had heard described as a woman of a certain age. He'd never been quite certain what age that was. But things weren't quite right. There were bats embroidered on the pink jumper, and the pattern on the furniture had a sort of bat look. The little dog with a bow round its neck, lying curled up on a cushion, looked more like a rat than a dog. Vimes was less certain about that one, though. Dogs of that nature tended to look a bit rat-like in any case. The effect was as if someone had read the music but had never heard it played. He realized she was politely waiting for him and bowed stiffly.
"Oh, don't bother with that, please," said Lady Margalotta. "Do take a seat."
She walked over to a cabinet and opened it.
"Do you fancy a bull's blood?"
"Is that the drink with the vodka? Because—"
"No," said Lady Margalotta quietly. "This, I'm afraid, is the other kind.
Still, we have that in common, don't we? Neither of us drinks alcohol. I believe you were an alcoholic, Sir Samuel.
No, said Vimes, completely taken aback. I was a drunk. You have to be richer than I was to be an alcoholic.
Ah, well said. I have lemonade, if you wish. And, Miss Littlebottom, we don't have beer, you'll be pleased to hear.
Cheery looked at Vimes in amazement.
Perhaps a sherry, she said.
Certainly. You may leave us, Igor. Isn't he a treasure? She added, as Igor retired.
He certainly looks as though he's just been dug up, said Vimes. This was not going according to his mental script.
Oh, all Igors look like that. He's been in the family for almost 200 years, most of him anyway.
Really?
Extremely popular with the young ladies, for some reason. All Igors are. I found it best not to speculate why.
Lady Margarita gave Vimes a bright smile.
Well, here's to your stay, Sir Samuel.
You know a lot about me, said Vimes weakly.
Most of it good, I assure you, she said. Although you're inclined to forget your paperwork, you get exasperated easily, you are far too sentimental, you regret your own lack of education and distrust erudition in others, you are immensely proud of your city, and you wonder if you may be a class traitor. My friends in Ankh-Morpork were unable to find out anything very bad, and, believe me, they are pretty good at that sort of thing. And you loathe vampires.
I...
Quite understandable. We're dreadful people, by and large.
But you...
I try to look on the bright side, said Lady Margarita. But anyway, how did you like the king?
He's very quiet, said Vimes, the diplomat.
Dry cunning. He will have found out a lot more about you than you did about him, I'm sure. Would you like a biscuit? I don't eat them myself, of course, but there's a little man down in the town who does wonderful chocolate. Igor?
Yes, mistress,
said Igor. Vimes nearly sprayed his lemonade across the room.
He was out of the room, he said. I saw him go. I heard the door shut.
Igor has strange ways. Do give Sir Samuel a napkin, Igor.
You said the king was cunning, said Vimes, mopping lemonade off his breeches. Igor put down a plate of biscuits and shuffled out of the room.
Did I? No, I don't think I could possibly have said that. It's not the diplomatic thing to say, said Lady Margarita smoothly. I'm sure we all support the new low king, the choice of dwarfdom in general, even if they thought they were getting a traditionalist and got an unknown quantity.
Did you just say that last bit? Said Vimes, awash on a sea of diplomacy and damp trousers.
Absolutely not. You know their scone of stone has been stolen.
They say it hasn't, said Vimes.
Do you believe them?
No.
The coronation cannot go ahead without it. Did you know that?
We'll have to wait until they bake another one, said Vimes.
No, there will be no more low kings, said Lady Margarita. Legitimacy, you see. The scone represents continuity all the way to Bahrain Bloodaxe. They say he sat on it while it is still soft and left his impression, as it were.
You mean kingship has passed from backside to backside?
Humans believe in crowns, don't they?
Yeah, but at least they're at the other end.
Thrones, then, Lady Margarita sighed. People set such store by strange things. Crowns, relics, garlic. Anyway, there will be a civil war over the leadership, which Albrecht will surely win, and he'll cease all trading with Ankh-Morpork. Did you know that? He thinks the place is evil.
I know it is, said Vimes, and I live there.
I've heard that he plans to declare all dwarfs there Dharak,
the vampire went on. Vimes heard Cheery gasp.
It means not dwarfs.
That's very big of him, said Vimes. I shouldn't think our lads would worry about that.
Said Cheery. Quite so. The young lady looks worried, and you'd do well to listen to her, Sir Samuel.
Excuse me, said Vimes, but what is all this to you?
You really don't drink at all, Sir Samuel?
No.
Not even one?
No, said Vimes more sharply. You'd know that if you knew anything about...
"'Yet you keep half a bottle in your bottom drawer as a sort of permanent test,' said Lady Margalotta. "'Now that, Sir Samuel, suggests a man who wears his hair shuts on the inside.'
"'I want to know who's been saying all this.'
Lady Margalotta sighed. Vimes got the impression that he'd failed another test.
"'I am rich, Sir Samuel. Vampires tend to be, didn't you know? Lord Veterinari, I know, believes that information is currency. But everyone knows that currency has always been information. Money doesn't need to talk, it merely has to listen.'
She stopped and sat watching Vimes, as if she'd suddenly decided to listen. Vimes moved uncomfortably under the steady gaze.
"'How is Havelock Veterinari?' she said.
"'The patrician? Oh, fine.'
"'He must be quite old now.'
"'I've never really been certain of how old he is,' said Vimes. "'About my age, I suppose.'
Then she stood up suddenly.
"'This has been an interesting meeting, Sir Samuel. I trust Lady Sibyl is well?'
"'Yes.
Good.' I am so glad. We will meet again, I am sure. Igor will see you out. My regards to the Baron when you see him. Pat him on the head for me.
What the hell was that all about, Cheery? Said Vimes as the coach set off down the hill again.
Which bit, sir?
Practically all of it, really. Why should Ankh-Morpork dwarfs object if someone says they're not dwarfs? They know they're dwarfs.
They won't be subject to dwarf law, sir.
I didn't know they were.
I mean, it's like... "'How you live your life, sir. Marriages, burials, that sort of thing. Marriages won't be legal. Old dwarfs won't be allowed to be buried back home, and that'd be terrible. Every dwarf dreams of going back home when he's old and starting up a little mine.
Every dwarf, even the ones who were born in Ankh-Morpork.
"'Home can mean all sorts of things, sir,' said Cheery. "'There's other things, too. Contracts won't be valid. Dwarfs like good solid rules, sir.
We've got laws in Ankh-Morpork, too, more or less.'
Between themselves, dwarfs prefer to use their own, sir.
I bet the copperhead dwarfs won't like it if that happens.
Yes, sir, there'll be a split and another war.
She sighed.
But why was she going on about drink?
I don't know, sir.
I don't like 'em. Never have done, never will.
Yes, sir.
Did you see that rat?
Yes, sir.
I think she was laughing at me.
The coach rolled through the streets of Bionk once more.
How big a war?
A worse one than the one 50 years ago, I expect, said Cheery.
I don't recall people talking about that one, said Vimes.
Most humans didn't know about it, said Cheery. It mostly took place underground, undermining passages and digging invasion tunnels and so on. Perhaps a few houses fell into mysterious holes and people didn't get their coal, but that was about it.
You mean dwarfs just try to collapse mines on other dwarfs?
Oh, yes.
I thought you said they were all law-abiding.
Oh, yes, sir, very law-abiding, just not very merciful.
Ye gods, thought Vimes, as the coach rolled over the bridge in the centre of town. I haven't been sent to a coronation, I've been sent to a war that hasn't started yet. He glanced up. Tantony was watching him intently, but looked away quickly. Lady Margalotta watched the coach until it reached the gates of the town. She stood back a little from the window. There was a slight overcast, but habits of preservation died hard.
"'What a very angry man, Igor!'
"'Yes, mistress.'
"'You can see it piling up behind his patients. I wonder how far he can be pushed.'
"'I've brought the hearth around, mistress.'
"'Oh, is it that late? We'd better be going, then. Everyone feels despondent if I miss a meeting, you know.'
The castle on the other side of the valley was much more rugged than Lady Margalotta's confectionery item. Even so, the gates were wide open, and didn't look as though they were often closed. The main door was tall and heavy-looking. The only thing that suggested it hadn't been ordered from the standard castle catalogue was the smaller, narrow door a few feet high set into it.
"'What's that for?' said Vimes. "'Even a dwarf would bump their head.'
"'I suppose it depends on what shape you are when you go in,' said Cheery darkly.
The main door opened as soon as Vimes had laid his hand on the wolf's head knocker, but he was ready this time.
"'Good morning, Igor,' he said.
"'Good day, Your Excellency,' said Igor, bowing.
"'Igor and Igor send their regards, Igor.'
"'Thank you, Your Excellency. Since you mention it, could I put a parcel on your coat for Igor?'
"'You mean the Igor at the embassy?'
"'That's who I said, sir,'
said Igor patiently.
He asked me if I could lend him a hand.
Yep, no problem now.
Good. It's well wrapped up, and the ice will keep it nice and fresh. Would you step this way? The master is changing at the moment.
Igor shambled into a wide hall, one side of which was mostly fireplace, and bowed out.
"Did he say what I thought he said?" said Vimes. "About the hand and ice?"
"It's not what it sounds like, sir," said Cheery.
"I hope so. My God, look at that damned thing!"
A huge red flag hung from the rafters. In the middle of it was a black wolf's head, its mouth full of stylized flashes of lightning.
"Their new flag, I think," said Cheery.
"I thought it was just a crest with a double-headed bat.
Perhaps they thought it was time for a change, sir."
"Ah, Your Excellency, isn't Sybil with you?"
The woman who had entered was Angua, but padded somewhat with years. She was wearing a long, loose green gown, very old-fashioned by Ankh-Morpork standards, although there are some styles that never go out of date on the right figure. She was brushing her hair as she walked across the floor.
She's staying at the embassy today. We had a rather difficult journey. You would be the Baroness Seraphine von Oberwald."
"And you're Sam Vimes. Sybil's letters are all about you. The Baron won't be long. We were out hunting and lost track of time."
"I expect it's a lot of work, seeing to the horses," said Vimes politely.
Seraphine's smile went strange for a moment.
"Ha, yes," she said. "Can I get Igor to fetch you a drink?"
"No, thank you."
She sat down on one of the overstuffed chairs and beamed at him.
"You've met the new king, Your Excellency?"
"This morning."
"I believe he's having trouble."
"What makes you think that?" said Vimes.
Seraphine looked startled.
"I thought everyone knew."
"Well, I've hardly been here 5 minutes," said Vimes. "I probably don't count as everyone."
Now, he was pleased to note, she looked puzzled.
"We just heard there was some problem," she said.
"Oh, well, a new king, a coronation to organise, a few problems are bound to occur," he said.
Well, he thought, so this is diplomacy. It's like lying only to a better class of people.
"Yes, of course."
"Angua is well," said Vimes.
"Are you sure you won't have a drink?" said Seraphine quickly, standing up. "Ah, here is my husband."
The Baron entered the room like a whirlwind that had swept up several dogs. They bounded ahead of him and danced around him.
"Hello, hello," he boomed.
Vimes looked at an enormous man. Not fat, not tall, just built perhaps one-tenth over scale. He didn't so much have a face with a beard, as a beard with, peeking over the top in that narrow gap between the moustache and the eyebrows, small remnants of face. He bore down on Vimes in a cloud of leaping bodies, hair, and a smell of old carpets. Vimes was ready for the handshake when it came, but even so had to grimace as his bones were ground together.
"Good of you to come, hey? Heard so much about you."
But not enough, Vimes thought. He wondered if he'd ever have the use of his hand again. It was still being gripped. The dogs had transferred their attention to him. He was being sniffed.
"Greatest respect for Ankh-Morpork, hey?"
said the Baron.
Good, said Vimes.
Blood was getting no further than his wrist.
"Have seat,"
the Baron barked. Vimes had been trying to avoid the word, but that was exactly how the man spoke, in short, sharp sentences, every one an exclamation. He was herded towards a chair. Then the Baron let go of his hand and flung himself onto the huge carpet, the excited dogs piling on top of him. Seraphine made a noise somewhere between a growl and a ch of wifely disapproval. Obediently, the Baron pushed the dogs aside and flung himself into a chair.
"You'll have to take us as you find us," said Seraphine, smiling with her mouth alone. "This has always been a very informal household."
"It's a very nice place," said Vimes weakly, staring around the enormous room.
Trophy heads lined the wall, but at least there were no trolls. No weapons, either. There were no spears, no rusty old swords, not even a broken bow, which was practically against the law of castle furnishing. He stared at the wall again, and then at the carving over the fireplace, and then his gaze travelled down. One of the dogs, and Vimes had to be clear about this, he was using the term dogs, merely because they were indoors, and that was a place where the word wolf was not usually encountered, was watching him. He'd never seen such an appraising look on a creature's face. It was weighing him up. There was something familiar about the pale gold hair that was a sort of mane. In fact, it looked quite like Angua, but heavier set. And there was another difference, which was small yet horribly significant. Like anger, it had this sense of movement stilled, but whereas anger always looked as if she was poised to flee, this one looked poised to leap.
"The embassy is to your liking? We owned it, you know, before we sold it to Lord Vetinari,"
said Vimes, reluctantly taking his eyes off the wolf.
"Of course, your people made a lot of changes," she went on. "We've made a few more," said Vimes, recalling all those patches of shiny woodwork where the hunting trophies had been removed.
"I must say, I was really impressed with the bath
I'm sorry." There had been almost a yelp from the Baron. Seraphine was glaring at her husband.
"Yes," she said sharply. "I gather interesting things have been done."
"You're so lucky to have the thermal springs," said Vimes. And this was diplomacy too, he thought, when you let your mouth chatter away while you watched people's eyes. It's just like being a copper.
"Sibyl wants to take the waters at Bart Heiss's butt."
Behind him he heard a faint growl from the Baron and saw the look of annoyance flash across Seraphine's face.
"I'm saying the wrong thing," he said innocently. "My husband is a little unwell at the moment," said Seraphine,
in the special wife voice which Vimes recognised as meaning, "He thinks he's fine right now, but just you wait till I get him alone."
"I suppose I'd better present my credentials," said Vimes, pulling out the letter.
Seraphine reached across quickly and took it from his hand.
"I shall read it," she said, smiling sweetly. "Of course, it's a mere formality. Everyone's heard of Commander Vimes. I mean no offence, of course, but we were a little surprised when the patrician—"
"Lord Vetinari," said Vimes helpfully, putting a slight stress on the first syllable and hearing the growl on cue.
"Yes, indeed. Said that you would be coming. We were expecting one of the more experienced diplomats."
"Oh, I can hand round the thin cucumber sandwiches like anything," said Vimes. "And if you want little golden balls of chocolate piled up in an heap, I'm your man."
She gave him a slow, blank stare.
"Your pardon, Your Excellency," she said. "Morpokian is not my first language, and I fear we may have inadvertently misled one another. I gather that you are in real life a policeman?"
"In real life, yes," said Vimes.
"We've always been against a police force in Bionk," said the Baroness. "We feel it interferes with the liberties of the individual."
"Well, I have certainly heard that argument advanced," said Vimes. "Of course, it depends on whether the individual you are thinking of is yourself, or the one climbing out of the bathroom," he noticed the grimace, "window with the family silver in a sack."
"Happily, security has never been a problem for us," said Seraphine.
"I'm not surprised," said Vimes. "I mean, because of all the walls and gates and things."
"I do hope you will bring Sibyl to the reception this evening. But I see that we are keeping you, and I know you must have much to do. Igor will show you out."
"Yes, mistress," said Igor behind Vimes.
Vimes could fear the river of fury building up behind the levees of his mind.
"I'll tell Sergeant Anger you asked after her," he said, standing up.
"Indeed," said Seraphine.
"But right now I'm looking forward to a really relaxing bath," said Vimes,
and watched with satisfaction as both the Baron and his wife flinched. "Good day to you." Cheery marched along beside him across the hallway.
"Don't say a word until we're out of here," hissed Vimes.
"Sir?"
"Because I want to get out of here," said Vimes.
Several of the dogs had followed them out. They weren't growling, they hadn't bared their teeth, but they were carrying themselves with rather more purpose than Vimes had come to associate with groin sniffers in general.
"I've put the parcel in the coach, Your Excellency," said Igor, opening the coach door and knuckling his forehead.
"I'll be sure to give it to Igor," said Vimes.
"Oh, not to Igor, sir. This is for Igor."
"Oh, right."
Vimes looked out of the windows as the horses trotted away. The golden-haired wolf had come to the steps and was watching him leave. He sat back as the coach rumbled out of the castle and closed his eyes. Cheery was wise enough to remain silent. "No weapons on the walls, do you notice?" he said after a while. His eyes were still shut, as if he was looking at a picture on the back of them. "Most castles like that have things hanging all over the place."
"Well, they are werewolves, sir."
"Does Anger ever talk about her parents?"
"No, sir." They didn't want to talk about her, that's certain. Vimes opened his eyes. Dwarfs, he said. I've always got on with dwarfs. And werewolves? Well, never had a problem with werewolves. So why is the only person who hasn't tried to blow me out this morning the blood-sucking vampire?
I don't know, sir.
Big fireplace they had.
Werewolves like to sleep in front of the fire at night, sir, said Cheery.
The Baron certainly didn't seem comfortable in a chair. I spotted that. And what was the motto carved into that great big mantelpiece?
Hominy... Homo homini lupus, sir, said Cheery. It means every man is a wolf to another man.
Ha! Why haven't I promoted you, Cheery?
Because I get embarrassed about shouting at other people, sir. Sir, did you notice the strange thing about the trophies they had on the wall?
Vimes shut his eyes again. Stag? Bears? Some kind of mountain lion? What are you asking me, Corporal?
And did you notice something just below them?
Let's see. I think there was just space below them.
Yes, sir, with three hooks on it. You could just make them out.
Vimes hesitated. Do you mean, he said carefully, three hooks that might have had trophies hanging from them until they were removed?
Very much that sort of hook, sir, yes, only perhaps the heads haven't been hung up yet.
Troll's heads?
Who knows, sir?
The coach entered the town. Cheery, have you still got that silver chainmail vest you used to have?
No, sir, I stopped wearing it because it seemed a bit disloyal to Angua, sir. Why?
Just a passing thought. Oh, ye gods, is that Igor's parcel under the seat?
I think so, sir, but look, I know about Igor's. If that's a real hand, the original owner hasn't got a use for it, believe me.
What? He cuts bits off dead people?
Better than live people, sir.
You know what I mean.
Sir, it's considered good manners if one of the Igors has helped you to put it in your will so that they can help themselves to any parts that might help someone else. They never ask for any money. People just carry little cards. They're very respected in Uberwald. Very good men with a scalpel and a needle. It's a kind of vocation, really.
But they're covered in scars and stitches.
They won't do to anyone else what they're not prepared to try on themselves.
Vimes decided to explore the full horror of this. It took his mind off the missing trophies. Are there any Igorinas, Igorettes?
Well, any Igor is considered a good catch for a young lady.
He is?
And their daughters tend to be very attractive.
Eyes at the same height, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes.
But the door, when it was finally opened in response to impatient knocking, revealed not the switchback features of Igor, but the business end of Detritus's crossbow, which was marginally worse.
It's us, Sergeant, said Vimes.
The crossbow was removed, and the door opened further.
"Sorry, sir, but you said I was to be on guard," said Detritus.
"There's no need to.
Igor's been hurt, sir."
Thank you.